Mini-episode 1946 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. We have with you today FDH Lounge original dignitaries Rick Morris and Chris Galloway. We are breaking down the NFL division by division, and right now that means that we're getting into the AFC North. The previous segment that we did, the AFC East, that's the token one that we're going to do where we talk about some of the big picture offseason stuff. The rest of these are narrowly focused on the specific divisions at hand, and we will culminate after we do the NFC West. We will do a breakdown, an early prediction of the playoffs for this year, and we will see the degree to which Chris's dog ends up concurring with us on these picks here. Evincing a great degree of enthusiasm for our segment at this point, Chris, and I would concur. I think we've been killing it to this point.
Absolutely. And another fine day to be with you, Rick. Love your outfit today, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Yours as well.
thank you. No, Kiva got very vocal because we're going to be talking about all things dog back.
Yes, as we do that, and as we do all things AFC North, we'll be doing it in the form of taking some content, repurposing it, if you will, as the foundation for our segment from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And when you go towards the last two pages, it's the one run-on sentence for each team. So for the AFC North teams, here's the one run-on sentence that we have for each team, and this is in the predicted order of finish for the AFC North. Start with Baltimore. The team remains questionable in the trenches, having essentially stood still on a net basis. Yes, adding stud guard Ione in the draft, but losing the best center in the league, Tyler Linderbaum. But in a bad division and having picked the right head coach in Jesse Minter, the Ravens will be poised to continue their January tradition of disappointing their fans. Cincinnati, the offensive line is still bad. Come on, it's the Bengals. They're not going to commit to resources in all areas. But the defense was upgraded, and a healthy Joe Burrow with his wide receivers could very well result in a playoff berth. Pittsburgh, quietly, the team upgraded an aging defense, but a suspect offensive line will still be aimlessly loitering in front of the rapidly aging Aaron Rodgers, and the team will be performing for a coach stuck on the cutting edge of yesteryear, so the tradition of mediocrity on the Three Rivers will be discontinued on the downside. Cleveland, one of the league's most gruesome quarterback rooms, will sandbag the new head coach, who was not sought by any other team, even as the offensive line upgrades from historically bad to merely below average, but the defense will be hard-pressed to maintain its momentum under a new coordinator and system, and now with, let's not call him a Timu Myles Garrett, but maybe a target Myles Garrett, the team is positioned, at most, merely a few tiny steps ahead of where they were in 2024 and 2025. And on that note, I will say, that was, of course, written before the team fully committed to Deshaun Watson. So that part to me is null and void. I'm going to say worse than they were last year. And again, we'll have between the historic level of excrement that is that franchise in all of its continued permutations, and the teams that have been the dominant teams at the top in recent years, Baltimore and Cincinnati, there is a lot to talk about with this division, Chris.
Yeah, Rick, I think that the Ravens are a great example of a team that got better with a few spots and then got worse in a few spots. And then we have now these sort of coaching question marks that we don't know about. And so I'm kind of tempted that just based on the flux in the talent levels that some have gone up and then they've lost guys like Linderbaum, I'm probably inclined to, and they lost their starting center, to injury already. So I'm going to say 10-7, like basically no change. Like it's kind of holding serve, if you will, for the Ravens, no real change. I think 10-7 is good enough to actually win the division. And so I'm going to take the Ravens in first place because I cannot believe in the Steelers and where they're at. I mean, you and I have been predicting them to drop off for several years now, but they've managed to hold on and to keep that together. I actually think the Steelers are looking at, I'm going to say it, I think they're going to be 8-9. I think they're the third place team in this division. And I'm going to have the Bengals at 9-8. Just because, one, Burrow never gets through a season unbroken in some capacity. And I'm not predicting that he's going to lose, most of the season or, but even three or four games with some minor injuries, I think will be enough with a defense that is, I understand Dexter Lawrence, and that will help them a lot. But you also subtracted by losing a very good defensive end. So it isn't, again, like they improved in one area and got worse in another. I don't see anything in that defense that tells me they're going to be demonstrably better. And so I'm going to say, Burrow's around for, we'll call it 13 games. Let's say he's more healthy than not. The offense will score a lot of points. The defense will let them down again. And, I just see them as, again, like a 9-8 or 10-7 squad losing a tiebreak maybe to the Ravens if they're 9-8 or if they're 10-7 or they finish second at 9-8. Steelers are just getting older. They're just getting older and older. And I know they put on, they added a couple pieces offensively. Rodgers just got older. I know they brought McCarthy. It's going to be a better designed offense than what they've had, but I don't think they have the horses to run it. And I think a defense that's getting older won't be able to keep them in games as well. And so, they're another team that I'm like 8-9, 9-8. The Steelers have like a 7-game stretch that's just brutal. I don't, if people have gone and looked at their late schedule, I mean, they've got 6 games. They have Bengals, Eagles, Broncos, Texans, Jaguars, Ravens to the 6-week stretch. Rick, they could go 1-5 in that.
Yeah.
So if you go 1-5 in that brutal stretch, 8-9 is not a crazy prediction. Or even if you win 2, you go 9-8. Again, I don't think either one of those are setting the world on fire. And I don't think they're making the playoffs.
No, they're not.
And then, unfortunately, pulling up the rear is formerly yours, currently my Cleveland Browns. And they had another really good draft. And they've added some parts. Williams at linebacker, I like better than Bush. They've improved in a couple spots. They had the worst offensive line in football last year. I don't know that they addressed the line. Okay. As I was a big advocate for
them. They threw bodies at it. They threw bodies.
No, yeah, they threw bodies at it. And as I said to somebody online, maybe it was on a Twitter debate or something the other day, they sort of made that point, and I'm like, but are they going to be the 32nd ranked offensive line again? I don't think so, because Fano appears to be the right, the real deal. He was my pick at tackle. He was who I wanted with that top 10 pick. They picked him. You know, so far he has looked like the part. Yes, he's a rookie. He's going to have some growing pains, but he looks legit. And so they brought some veterans in to try to stabilize that are going to be better than last year. If you've watched the Texans this year, Wyatt Teller has already been demoted to second string, it would appear. So, you know, again, showing what the Browns thought was that he was done. And so I just don't believe the offensive line will be as bad as it was last year. Okay, let's say they're the 24th or 25th best line instead of the 32nd. It's going to be improvement. It's going to help Judkins. It's going to help the run game. They address wide receiver in the draft, I think, very well. Concepcion, who I was not in favor of. You know, Jason and I, our good friend Jason Jones, and I really didn't like that pick at the time because of the, you know, because of his catch issues in college. But what we've seen so far in offseason and in camp is a young man who reminds me a lot of Steve Smith, and he's not been dropping the ball. Now, maybe when the lights go on and we start week one, he drops everything. I don't know. But so far, he has looked like a first-round pick. And David Boston looks like a Mike Evans type, which was my closest comp that I could come up with for him for before the draft, and was a pick I really liked. I know the knock on him is whether he could separate. He seems to be able to so far in terms of preseason. And he catches everything. And he's a big, strong body. So the Browns really, you know, they really addressed wide receiver. They didn't do, they failed at addressing tight end depth. I mean, they're a mess there. And everybody just wants to kind of ignore it. Harold Fannin, Pro Bowl quality tight end going into year two, he's going to be great. But, you know, so the running game is there. The offensive line should be better. It really takes, and I don't think that, and let's talk about the Myles Garrett trade. I think that in the past, I was never in favor of trading Myles just because you couldn't get back anything close to what you were losing.
Yeah, four quarters for a dollar.
And I felt like in this trade, they actually came close, right? Jared Verse is a really good young player. He's a leader. He's going to provide a lot of the things that – he's going to do some of the things that Myles Garrett didn't do well. He does actually better than Myles. Now, if you're talking – sack totals? No, he's not going to get 23 sacks this year. My guess is Jared Verse gets like 12 sacks this year. I'm curious to see how it works out for Myles going from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and he's going to have to take on some other responsibilities that the Browns never asked of him. Don't be shocked if statistically Myles Garrett doesn't have the year that everybody thinks he's going to have because of the role change and the defensive change. In the same way, moving from a 3-4 to a 4-3, Jared Verse might be in a much better situation for him. So I think the defense, other than lacking depth, which, I think is actually the case for most rosters. We all like to talk about depth, but, you know, I would say half the teams in this league don't have great depth. I think the Browns' defense is probably not much different than last year. Probably pretty close. It's going to be a top 10 unit. And it really will come down to the quarterback situation in terms of Ken, Watson, and then maybe later in the year, Sanders game manage enough within the Monken offense to score more than the 16 points a game that offense did last year. And I think with better wide receiver play, better offensive line play, they should score more than 16 points a game. To that end, I was prepared to say 7-10 until this past weekend, and I got to knock a game off because the debacle with the Watson press conference
Just a game.
The negativity and everything. I mean, it's just, I think what the fans don't understand, I will actually say this, is that that locker room wants Watson to start. No, you can look at me like that. Yeah, no, they do.
What?
Yeah, I think they do. And
are
and
they masochists?
Well, I think they. Well, I think it's.
Do
the
these
part
guys
that you
practice cuckery in their off time? Like, why? Why would you want that?
Because I think that entire quarterback room sucks.
They and do. I think, but you got to find out what you got in Sanders for the love of Pete. You got to find out.
Rick, you're talking like a fan. An NFL player does not sit around going, you know what we got to do? This whole season is going to be about finding out what we got in number two. There's no offensive player in that locker room, Rick, that's thinking that way. They want to win games, dude. And if they're in those classroom sessions, they're in that huddle. They're in the parts that you and I aren't in, the media's in. And I am telling you, I just think that this team thinks, and they might be right, because again, despite all the huff and puff, Sanders was awful last year, okay? And that's not to say Watson hasn't been awful. Last time we saw him, he was awful. But I think that team wants to try to win some games. The players in the locker room is what I'm talking about. They have no interest in trying to, like, let's see what he's got. That's the crap for you and I, not for the guys in the locker room. And they want the best opportunity to win. And I think that most of that locker room probably thinks, at least right now, start the season, Watson gives them their best chance to win. What happens later in the year, I think that could change. But I think that's what they think, because he's a veteran. I think that he processes quicker. I see it on the field in the preseason. He may be doing throwing worm burners, but he processes quicker than Sanders. Sanders processes very, very slowly.
Yeah, but he's washed. He's completely washed. And let me tell you something. This team has no future if what you're saying is right, because collectively, they're as sentient as a bowl of goldfish. If they think Watson is the answer at this point in time, as thoroughly washed as this guy is, as much of a, you know, as mentally crippled as he is at this point in time, psychologically crippled, every way that you can imagine, this guy is the most pathetic turd that the league has seen in the last century. If they think he gives them the best chance when he is such a flaming dumpster, such a flaming, on every level, there's not a level where you can look at the guy where he's not a laughing stock. That says nothing for this team if they think inside the room he's a better answer than Sanders, where at least there's some hope that he grows out of it. I mean, I don't get it.
I may be wrong, but I think that team, I think if you secretly pulled that team, and we already saw it once with Jerry Jeudy when he was asked, and they said, who do you want to win? And he said, I'm just telling you, the veterans in that locker room, that I don't think at this point they believe Shador can process and do what needs to be done. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, listening to Jerry Jeudy's opinion on anything, same organization where Jimmy Haslam listened to a homeless man who told him to draft Johnny Manziel. So, yeah, so they only listen to the best people upstairs here, Chris. Jerry Jeudy's telling them they should play Watson. I don't need any more evidence than that.
I don't, you know, you can act outraged all you want, but I think that
I think that's
where Monken's at, right? I think before Saturday Monken was going to name Watson the starter. I think we all knew it, and I think most people have come to realize that he had the better spring overall, and that isn't saying much. I'm not saying it's saying much. I'm saying that they're both garbage. And again, I've said to you off the air, I don't believe any of this quarterback room is or will be on the roster next year, other than Taylen Green trying to learn how to become a wide receiver.
Right.
I mean, it is a developmental quarterback room. Watson trying to get back what that was lost. Shador trying to learn a playbook is and how to read a defense. And I will say this. I don't want this to come off as like I'm all down on Shador. He was not prepared for the NFL, right? And that's his father's fault, coach's fault in college, yep. All the rest of it.
Yep. Sorry, aunties, it's true.
And the reason he fell to the fifth round was teams realized in the pre-draft process he doesn't know how to, he doesn't know how to process a playbook. He can't read a defense. He's slow in process. They figured it out, right? And so to his credit, and I will say this, to his credit, Shador has worked hard to work on those things. He worked hard on them last year trying to learn. He's drinking out of a fire hose, right? He's trying to learn the NFL game for a guy who did not get enough of that stuff in college to prepare him, right?
Yeah.
And consideringly, he's actually doing pretty well considering, right? But he's working and he's improving. I think that is all true, 100% true. I think that the coaches in the locker room look at Watson and they're like, he's been on that field. It's not been pretty as of late, but he's seen all of this. And let's start the season and try and see if he can manage the game because Sanders isn't ready. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. And Dillon Gabriel can't see the field. Dillon Gabriel has the brain and the processing, but he can't see the field, right? Like we've talked about, like if I could put his brain inside Shador's body, you'd have a quarterback, I think. So I think from the Browns standpoint, it's you can be outraged all you want, but I to me it's like what shit sandwich do you want to eat, right? I mean, and I think Todd Monken has said, I'll start the season trying to eat the shit sandwich that's at least been on the menu before. And
well,
out of it.
They killed my capacity for outrage 4 years ago. I'm just amused at this point. I think it's the most Browns thing that ever Browns in the history of the universe. I think doing this, I think when you look at, when you see, and again, just this is what loser dysfunctional organizations do. And I'd already seen like one of their apologists on social media today, like, when you listen to the fans, you end up sitting up in the stands with them. You notice that no good team has ever had to say that? Like, as much as I loathe the Patriots, you've never had the Patriots having to say something like that. Or the Seahawks or the Rams or anybody else. Nobody that matters in this league does the whole thing of like, well, actually, we're significantly smarter than the mouth breathers who are our fans. This goes back to an argument that I had on the show years ago with FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross, the whole thing about would you take somebody out of the phone book to be the GM of the team? And we had an argument at the time, like, because he even said that he used an example. He's like, don't tell me you would take the bone lady over the bums that are in there now. I said, I absolutely would take the bone lady over the bums that are in there now. Like, this is what bad teams do. This is what dysfunctional teams do, and this is why, Chris, you saw it today, why just this team becomes a national laughingstock whenever they do something like this. It's just the national reaction is Browns gonna Browns, and you can't tell me that they're wrong. You can't tell me that these people are wrong. This is one of the most Browns things that's ever Browns ever. They're like, we're gonna take this guy, we're gonna put him back in there. The fact that the press conference alone was not disqualifying the other day, as this guy got up there and played the victim, that after all the stuff that he had done and all the wrongs that this man, the serial wrongs that this man has perpetrated in his life, that towards scores of innocent people, okay? Which again, and then is full of self-pity about the way that he's been regarded in this. Wants a bronze star because he's come back from injury. The other players do it without crying about it. Like, the fact that that wasn't disqualifying, that's why the national media just today was just like, what do you expect from them? And that's where I'm at. I'm like, what do you expect? They killed my capacity for outrage 4 years ago. They'll never kill my capacity. They'll never kill my capacity for amusement. I'll always be amused at the Jimmy Haslam freak show. And you see it again, Chris.
Well, I would argue that I think that they would. Again, I don't. I some of the people, the national media, is like, well, they're starting Watson because of the money. I don't actually think that's the case.
That's not true. No, at least that's not true. No,
I don't think it is. I truly believe it is that this franchise actually wants to try to win games this year, right? I know that so many in the national media and some in the local press are like, they're just going to lose all the games they can. The organization is not trying to do that. They're actually trying to win games, which on the one hand, I appreciate, because that's what I want them to do. I hate the whole let's lose as many games as possible. Because if that was your goal, start tailing green, right? I mean, you know, and to me, that's the proof that that's not what it's about. What I actually think it is I agree with you. Under any other circumstance, the press conference should have been absolutely disqualifying. And we may not see Deshaun Watson week three, right? They'll have to make a decision after the first 2 weeks. Like are we really going to do this? But I also think that, and the part that the aunties don't want to acknowledge is, if Shador had been capable and ready and they felt internally like he could do the job in week one, they had their out and their ability to do it. And they internally analyzed and said, he can't do it. They don't believe in him, right? That's what it says more than about Watson. They're ready to move on from Watson, right? But Shador has been given every opportunity to try to be the guy. And again, he's worked his ass off. He's improved, right? But they internally analyzed and said, even after the debacle on Saturday, they went, fuck. Like, Watson is still the better guy for us to try to win games. If the goal was to tank, again, roll Shador out there, make the fans happy, send Watson home, right? I think that's why we're where we are. Now, I get it. From an optic standpoint, it makes the Browns, again, clowns again. And Watson just like an idiot, like still doesn't understand PR 101. You know, he's a dick shit. And come March, he'll be off his team finally. So
they're starting a lame duck. That's another reason. You're starting a lame duck. What does this do for the future of this team? If you're trying to win games and you're trying to build a winning program, you're putting a guy that we all agree is dunzo after 2026. What other team in the league would do something this stupid? Name me one. Not even the Chris Greer-led Dolphins at their lowest point would have done that. And that says something.
I think he first time. And head coach, I think a staff that wants to win games. I think that's all that's driving this, is that they are desperate to win games and to stop some of the loser culture. They don't want to be 2-15. They would rather be 7-10 and show that young roster they're going to play the guy who's better on the field, whether you think it or I think it, or the whole, well, let Shador just play it out. They're trying to win games. And that's why we are where we are. And again, you're right. In this regard, they put themselves in this mess, right? When after last year, they probably should have cut Shador loose, should have cut Dylan Gabriel loose. You want to draft Taylen Green as a developmental project. You're stuck with Watson on the roster. You just go out and you find a veteran, right? You find a veteran that you can win seven games with. You get rid of the guys that showed last year they're not the answer. You bring in a veteran that can bridge the gap, and you make Watson the backup, right? So he's not really going to ever be on the field. You're stuck paying a contract. And then you develop Taylen Green, and you roll some Jacoby Brissett type of veteran out.
He was available, and, yes.
And you just, and that, and you win. Jacoby Brissett running his team might win 8-9 games with his roster. I mean, that's a crazy bar. Jacoby Brissett could probably win 8 or 9 games with this roster. And I think that's where they screwed up, right? That they should have just said, Sanders, Gabriel, either cut him, trade him for like a pack of cigarettes, whatever. Just move on from it. Draft Green, developmental, fine. Third string guy. Watson is a second stringer. And you bring in a veteran. And you try to win 8-9 games, and you start the culture change. That's what GM Chris would have done, right? would have realized this is all Loserville. They didn't do it. And so to your point, that's why they're where they are now. And based on this, I don't blame Todd Monken for going, who's my best opportunity to beat the Jaguars? Well, I have Deshaun Watson, who is 7-0 against the Jaguars in his career. I guess I'll go with
I'm incredulous. I'm incredulous that they could think that he's the better one for all of Shadur's flaws, which still remain there to this day. The fact that you can't say that there's at least a scenario where he might be able to get something done. There is no scenario for Watson. And by the way, and again, I say this as somebody that in 2022, like I said, they killed it for me when they brought Watson in here. But at the same time, I said at the time, and so this is proof that I'm wrong about this. I'm just like, it would be the most Browns thing ever if he leads them to a Super Bowl and I can't even enjoy it. Like, I never thought he would suck. You remember what a proponent I was of him as a player in Houston. I'm one of the few people in this town that wanted him drafted in 2017 before we knew what a sick F he was, which, by the way, they chanted it that at him last time in Jacksonville, you sick F, except they used the word. And they will again for the opener, and I can't wait. But anyways, I never thought he would suck. I truly never thought he would suck. I mean, it makes it that much more delicious for me that he does.
No, I don't think
none of us.
Any of us understood that guy was like gone. Like,
yeah.
Obviously the Browns didn't know that, right?
Yeah.
They were like, well, okay, we're going to, you know, we'll get through all the legal stuff. Many guys go through legal stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to get a top five quarterback and we're going to be in business, right? It was not an unreasonable thing. And again, revisionist history, people forget, there were 13 teams trying to get Watson, right? There were 13 teams that were trying, I mean, maybe the different degrees.
Only one of them was dumb enough to make it happen, though. So,
sure. But guess what? If the Browns hadn't guaranteed him the contract, he would have gone through the same bullshit in Atlanta, right? The suspension, the mental struggles. I don't think he would have been the player. I think he would have happened there too. Now, because of the guarantees and all the rest of that, they would have been able to cut bait faster, right? And spend a little less. Maybe they only sink $180 million into him instead of $230 million, right? But to your point, Deshaun Watson's problem, as far as I can tell, is a bigger problem, other than muscle memory and not playing a lot in the last few years because of everything, and then the injuries, is that's his physical challenge. Like, so the game slows down for him. But Saturday's press conference became clear to me that I said this last year, he's washed mentally. I mean, it was clear that after the year before in 24, guy's washed. He's just done mentally. I thought, well, all right, maybe, you know, a couple years later, he's recovered. He's working to come back. I mean, frankly, he doesn't have to. I thought, okay, maybe he's going to get into a better frame of mind. Was he going to be the 2020 Watson? No. But it was like, can he be 70%, 75% of that Watson? Maybe. Okay, maybe he's turning a corner. And what we saw Saturday was that the real reason he's washed mentally is because for the first time in his life, and this is the part you don't know, how people will handle things. The fact when all this stuff came out, right, there's obviously some level of shame or embarrassment or whatnot, and he realizes people don't like him. And he went his whole life being the guy that everybody liked, and everybody thought he was a great guy. And people showered him with accolades and flowers at his feet and all the rest of that. And the first time in his life, everywhere he goes, he knows people think he's a scumbag, and he cannot process it mentally, and it affects him, his ability to play the game, and from that end, he's never going to recover. Right? You're right about that. He's just Saturday revealed for the first time this offseason, preseason, that oh shit, he ain't right. Despite his trying to make it look like he's better now and he's comfortable in his own skin, they revealed that, like, that was a lie. That was a lie. And I think leading up to Saturday, we thought it looked like he was finally comfortable with where he was at, and he was working to come back, and it was like, okay, you know, maybe he's going to just find a way to mentally move forward, and Saturday it all just unraveled. It just unraveled.
But it was like, but here's the thing, though, is that, like, you, everybody with half a brain knew that it was going to be a thing like he goes out on the field, instant booze. Everybody knew that. And that's the thing where, and again, I've said this to you off air, that, like, to paraphrase Michael Scott from The Office, Todd Monken here, Michael Scott with his line in the one episode, "I declare bankruptcy," as though that just makes it happen. Todd Monken in that same cadence, "History begins now." Every Browns coach expects that the world will forget everything that happened before they get hired. And it's like, hey, dipshit, why do you think the job came open in the first place? Because the previous guy expected the history to begin on his tenure. And it doesn't work that way. You can't wish the universe into reacting the way you think it's going to work. And that's what happens here. It's like, well, if the fans just wouldn't boo, they're going to. We can debate the right or the wrong of it or whatever. Even I wouldn't say that people should have cheered when he blew out his Achilles. I wouldn't have been cheering if I was in the stadium that day. I never would have been there in the first place.
That was classless. They shouldn't have. That was classless.
But it's human nature. That's what I'm saying. Bad organizations, dysfunctional, they ignore human nature. Or worse yet, they think they can override it through force of will. Oh, all these weak regimes previously couldn't control human nature. We can. Every other team in the league doesn't think that they can dictate human nature, Chris. This one does, and it's part of why they keep getting what they're getting, is that they think they can control it if the fans just wouldn't do that. But they're going to. What are you going to do about it? That's the whole thing. They think they can wish things away that are inconvenient. That's one of the biggest, things here of the Haslam regime.
I don't disagree with you on that, and I'm not here trying to defend the Haslam because there's no defense.
Sure.
I think that part of what I wondered actually going into Saturday is why are you going to have Deshaun play a quarter when with the second and third string players that he hasn't played with? Why even bother when we all kind of got the sense that, like, he's going to be the starter? Like, that to me was the tactical mistake by Monken, that it was like, he was going out there with players that he wasn't in a rhythm with, and it showed, right? Timing was off on throws. He didn't look great. You had the second and third string offensive line guy. It was discombobulated. And so that is what precipitated the boos, right? That's where Watson are wrong. Those people weren't booing because of 5 years ago in a massage parlor, right? We're booing because of performance and the contract, right? I think that the regime, to your point, thought, okay, if we start him, we start on the road with two games. Let's say we go 1-1 and he looks manageable. The team comes back for game three. They're 1-1. Watson looks like, you know, did okay, shaking the rust a little. The team got a win. I think fans actually would have booed him coming out in game three, right? Because there would be something to go like, okay, these guys are figuring it out. I actually don't think the fans would have been all boo, 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 boo. They were boo, 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 because in that moment, it was the first time since he had been on a field in front of them, since the last time he played like shit, and the shitty contract, and where the frustrations of where they are as a franchise, and they went boo, right? Because they wanted to express the fact that he has sucked on the field. That's where Watson's wrong, right?
And never been accountable.
He's like, well,
never
it's all been personal. Accountable.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. 100% agree. It was not about any of that other legal stuff. It was about the fact that, dude, they would forgive and forget if you didn't suck ass on the field. They were booing the field. Remember, this team booed Dylan Gabriel last year, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't because Dylan Gabriel is a known, moral creep. Everybody agrees, hey, he's a good kid. And they still booed him, right? Because it's all about performance. And I think to your point, that's what I didn't understand about Saturday. Because it was like, guys, you've orchestrated the whole offseason pretty well with Watson in terms of protecting him, trying to get him ready, setting it all up, you know, rolling out the reasons why. And then, again, that all's because they don't believe in Shador. Newsflash, aunties. And so they've done this, and then they roll him out in quarter three with players he hasn't played with. And it went just like you would assume it was going to go, like a fucking discombobulated mess. And so then fans do what they do. Yep. And now the whole season is all in turmoil. And had they just not played him, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I have an answer for that. I have an answer. Because this is what organizations that are historically bad like this, they layer ineptitude and toxicity. It's like one of those wonderful seven-layer bars that I used to eat when I was a kid. Here's what I'm talking about. Why did they do it that way? Because they knew they were going with Watson, but what they knew they had to, because again, why this team would have brought in Sanders in the first place a year ago, you and I have said, a team that has no margin of error for having sideshows, they draft a guy that brings a sideshow with him, okay? They had to roll out Sanders at one point in the preseason with the first team so that the aunties wouldn't be completely up their ass and making excuses. They were probably already making excuses about the racist, lightning storm, working against the kid the other day. But that's why they did it. They did it because, well, we can't give any, can't hand any weapons to the aunties to beat us over the head with. We have to roll Sanders out there. We've already made up our minds that he's not our guy, but that's what they did, Chris. There was no other reason to put Watson out there with a second team. It was so that they could lie to us, lie and say we hadn't made up our minds ahead of time. They had. It was not an open competition. They had their thumb on the scale, but because of the aunties, they had to pretend they didn't have their thumb up the scale. That's why they did what they did, Chris.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I actually do think, though, that there were moments during offseason and in camp where Shador actually did close the gap a little bit. And I think that they were like, well, okay, maybe we get bailed out on this thing. And then what really it showed was that, like, after the first preseason game, like, yeah, no, we are going to go with our first instinct and we're going to put Watson out there. And we're not going to start this season with Shador, and if Watson gets hurt, we know we're tanking our way to Archie Manning, which is who Jimmy Haslam wants anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, which again, I don't know that's the right answer. Archie Manning hasn't shown me that he's the answer. We gotta wait to see what happens this year. But no, I agree with you in some essence that, like, I actually think it was more of a real competition than what you were saying, but I also think it was they just believed that, like, we're pretty sure it's going to be Watson. We'll leave the door open just in case the kid somehow wows us. It didn't materialize, so it's, they were already prepared going into week two. After the week one preseason game that they realized, yeah, it's going to be Watson, that's when they should have just not put him on the field. But to your point, a bad franchise goes along with the optics of, like, he's playing his part, got to make a choice. And it was like, you could have just come out and said, you know what, I didn't need to see Watson with the third string, so I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody said, yeah, it makes sense. We know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You don't have the embarrassment. You don't have the interview. You don't have the toxicity. You don't have all the bullshit leading into week one, right?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about all that. They shot themselves in the foot after doing a pretty good job of trying to protect Watson and framing it and doing everything all off season. It took one fucking press conference to blow it all up.
Well, the other thing is, too, again, Sanders legitimately did look better than Watson on Saturday. Now, Watson looked better in the first preseason game, which, again, newsflash, the guy who plays with the starters, and it's the thing where it's as much as the radio honks, as much as this suck-ass Nathan Zagura with his whole thing about the Browns every year, the wide receiver room, dripping with Pro Bowlers, those ass clowns, come on, there's not enough depth at wide receiver to where the guy who's got the number two wide receivers is going to be in there being able to do anything. So it makes sense that the guy that's in there with the first team is also offensive line too. I mean, you know, who wants to get behind the second string of the offensive line when the first string is just, you know, Fennell and a bunch of guys that, you know, are basically, you know, not as crappy as the guys from last year. That's all say about them.
And in Shador's case, he was playing with the second string.
Yeah.
Most of the starting offensive line was not out there with Shador.
Well,
and you were at the second slash third string with Watson.
Yeah, that's true. So Watson,
it was even worse than that.
Yeah, it was. You're right about that.
It was even worse than that. So you're absolutely right. Again, I said, you know, before that game, like, I don't understand why we're putting Watson out on the field. He went out on the field. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Again, expectedly so. He has and played with these guys. He's playing with second and third string guys. They're not very good. We don't have good depth. And so it was going to look like shit. And it did, right?
Yeah.
And then fans do what they do. They boo because they want to express to Watson that, boo you, you have sucked since you've been here, right? He goes into the interview room and does, and all this nincompoop had to say was, fans are right. They have every right to boo me. Because much to my disappointment, this hasn't worked out the way I wanted it to. I really wanted to bring a Super Bowl to this town, and I've had injuries and other things, and I have not lived up to that contract, and I understand the fans' frustrations, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to do my damnedest to try to be the best player that I can be, because that's what they deserve. That's all he had to say, and he makes the fans look bad. But to your point, he's incapable, because he's been a spoiled, suffered brat child his whole life, and has no sense of accountability. Ability, and then we got what we got in that press conference, right? And then it just went bonkers in terms of the radio, you know, and look, I watched that press conference live after the game, and I sat there, you know, like going, oh dear God, he's just throwing gasoline, and I think he's too stupid to understand what he's doing.
Yeah,
you know,
that much is clear. Yeah,
And again, I'm not going to trash Shador in this sense. I think in his heart, he's a good kid. I think he has a lot of toxic people around him, including family members. But I think he's trying. I think he's worked hard, and I think he's improved. I also think the reality is he's not a starting NFL quarterback. He's not. And he's not going to be. Now, does he have a career as a backup potentially? Maybe. Is he going to play games with the Browns this year? You're damn right he is. Because what are the odds Watson stays healthy? Right? I thought Shador would probably play eight games this year, 6 to 8 games.
Yeah.
Right? And my hope was that by the second half of the season, he'll have been in the new playbook enough, practice enough, and that he would come out and have an opportunity to, like, he'd be a little better and in a better position to do well.
Yeah.
To his benefit. You know, which is why initially I thought that's part of the reason they're going to start the season with Watson, right? Like, hey, he's a veteran. The line won't be gelled. He's going to have to make quicker decisions than Sanders can do right now. Let's start with him. Maybe we can win a couple of games. We're trying to win some games. And let's go, right? And it all went to hell in a handbasket. And so here we are, right? Ravens, first place in the division. 10-7, they're not going to be world beaters, man. I don't believe any team in this division is going to be world beaters. The Bengals
can hang
with anyone offensively, but their defense is not going to be there. The Steelers have gotten old and creaky on defense. They'll be better on offense, but Aaron Rodgers is just about done, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have enough offensive talent, in my opinion, to really compete in the top tier of the AFC. So they're looking at 9-8, 8-9. Bengals are looking at 9-8. Ravens at 10-7. Browns at probably, I'll just say 6-11. I was going to say 7-10. And after this last weekend, I'll downgrade it to 6-11.
I'll say 3-14.
Yeah, I'll say 6-11. And, you know, that's where we're at. And the Browns will have the 9th pick in the draft or whatever. And the 31st pick in the draft or whatever, and they'll have to package those next year with a, maybe throw in their second, third rounder to try to move up, you know, to get a you know, get in that top four somehow, maybe, and get a quarterback, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's where we're at.
As regards the Bengals, I have them making the playoffs as a wild card. Now, with New England, I didn't, but I have Cincinnati as a second place team making a wild card. Are you going the other way as me again? You had New England in the East making it as a wild card, but it doesn't sound like you're as inclined with the Bengals.
I have them missing the playoffs again, and I have Joe Burrow publicly ruminating about not playing football anymore.
Not playing football anymore? Wow. Not just I want out, but okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, I think it'll be the way he starts. I think it's the way he starts his extraction from Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
I think after next season, there'll be all this talk about Joe Burrow. You know, does he really want to do football anymore? I don't know. This is not much fun. This kind of sucks. You know,
yeah.
I'm reevaluating my life. I'm off to Milan to some fashion show and some new model I'm dating, and I'm gonna have to decide whether I want to do this. I think that's where the Bengals season ends, and Bengals fans are just in a panic at that point.
Yeah, that's the smarter way to do it. And possibly part of his trial balloon could be, hey, Andrew Luck looks like he's having a lot of fun as the Stanford general manager. Maybe I'll go up the road to Athens and become the Ohio University general manager. How about that?
Yeah, I'm guessing he's probably not heading back to our fair alma mater.
You don't think so?
To do that. I don't think he's returning to Athens. I think he's become too accustomed to big towns and beautiful places and beautiful beaches and beautiful women. And good on him. But, you know, he does get to – he might try to force his way out of – I think this season ends with him trying to force his way out of Cincinnati next year after the season.
Yeah. And of course, the national media, all the honks are like, oh, imagine him in a Jets uniform. The next Broadway Joe. So –
all right, well, I'll throw this out to desperate, thirsty Browns fans. Browns will have two first-round picks. Joe Burrow is going to try to force his way out. He grew up a Browns fan.
The Brown family would never do that, but if you're the
right.
Browns...
I mean, you're right about it. They would never trade. They'll never trade him in division. You're right.
But if you're the Browns, you got to be willing to pay even a better price than that. I mean, if the starting rate is the 9 and the 31, the Browns got to be like, okay, how bad is it? How much more do you want? That's the only sane way to go. You do what you got to do to get Joe Burrow if you're the Browns. But because they're the Browns, that'll never happen. So then they'll just be looking for.
You remember before that draft, you and I. Remember before that draft, you and I sat on here and we raised the question, would you take two ones and Baker Mayfield and ship them to the Bengals for Joe Burrow, who had just finished his first season? And we both said, hell yes.
Yeah.
Baker had finished it. They were getting ready to end draft the Joe yet. And we said,
yeah.
Would you give two ones and Baker to the Bengals for the number one pick? Obviously, it was going to be Joe Burrow. And you and I both said, hell yes.
Yeah. Not least of which, because there's no Burrow bros out there, which is the commonality with the Shitter aunties. So, yeah, it's we'll have to see where he ends up after this season and what happens. Again, what happens after this season on both ends of Lake Erie, or both ends of Ohio, I should not Lake Erie, as you can tell, it's the time of night that I'm recording this here. But, both ends of Ohio, I should say, after this season is going to be fascinating, both with Burrow and whatever comes next with the clown show on the lake here that they've been operating. But one last thing,
just again, bold predictions, right? And way too early predictions.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is done.
Yeah.
Browns are finally free of Deshaun Watson and have to go get somebody, right?
Yeah.
Burrow's going to try to get out of Cincinnati. And I think Lamar will be done in Baltimore as well. I think he'll want out too. I think there's a real possibility that next season there are four new starting quarterbacks in the AFC North.
Interesting. I think that could be the case. And my further prediction on Aaron Rodgers is, given what his priorities are these days, I predict that he starts before the end of this season. He has a contract in place with OutKick where he's actually live streaming during football games and giving his political and social takes during football games. Because, I mean, that's what he cares about right now, not football, is just going on TV and having diarrhea of the mouth. I predict that he'll be live streaming. He'll be dropping back, you know, to throw a pass. And like, I can't believe how much Fauci sucks. Isn't he the one? Oh, you know, it'll be in-game. That's the final frontier for Aaron Rodgers.
He does have to spend more time at home with Manti Te'o's ex-wife, so that's important.
Yeah. Yes, he does. And he's the first to tell you that how much he loves his family and they love him, which, I mean, you want a cookie? Like, some of us have gone our whole lives with that being the case, asshole. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're special because you love your family and they love you. Like, come on. What are we doing here? So... whatever. Aaron Rodgers is, it just, you know, shudder to think what's going to happen to that guy post-football and what we'll be subject to as far as hearing from him. But in the meantime, like you said, one more year for him on the field and what will be a very eventful year in the AFC North. Thank you so much, Chris Galloway, for being here for the breakdown. And thank you, everybody, for checking out our 2026 AFC North breakdown on the FDH Lounge.